Doom Patrol, Negative Man, Elastigirl, Robot Man.
Someone wants the Doom Patrol reunited.
Your every word and action
is being broadcast across the planet.
Now, Monsieur Mana!
Well done, my Doom Patrol. Well done.
It is too late for you, Calder. Your beloved patrol is doomed.
Hello. Welcome to Waiting for Doom, the world's greatest podcast about the hot, hot, hotness. That is the Doom Patrol.
Yeah, I'm Paul. You can find me on Twitter at reading_hicks. And we're also in the Gmail world of waitingfordoom@gmail.com. That's email with a G. And we're also on Facebook, which is Facebook with an F. This is going well. And if you want to see a post related to our podcast, you can find one at mygreatestadventure80.blogspot.com every week. And that's done by our friend Doug. And all our episodes available on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and Podbean.com.
Yeah. Hello, I'm Mike. You can find me on Twitter at AvantGarve. You can also find on Twitter our sentient show account, Wilfred, who is at WFDPod. And as always, we are proudly brought to you by ComicCosity.com, your greatest source for news, reviews, previews, and awesome articles all about the comic love.
Yeah, I was looking on Comicosity today, and there's a great new article about, well, it's a section called Heroes, but they emphasize the her in Heroes. And there's an article about Becky Cloonan with an interview by Jessica Boyd, friend of the show, Charming Red on Twitter. And yeah, she's talking to Becky Cloonan about what her influences are, how music relates to her art. And Becky Cloonan does Gotham Academy. She's worked on the Killjoys comic by Gerard Way.
Oh, yes.
And she's done a bit of Batman, American Vampire and stuff. So, yeah, that was a really good interview. Very interesting.
Excellent.
Awesome. Cool. Awesome.
Cool and awesome.
Hey, Jessica. Yeah, how was your week in comics, Mike?
My week in comics, a bit light on. I haven't read anything since we last spoke. I've been more catching up on bagging and boarding and updating my collection and making a lot of cuts to my pull list at my comic store. Sometimes the reality of being a grown-up means you have to make sacrifices, and I've just had to let go of some titles that I can't afford as many comics as I used to be able to, basically.
You didn't kill a goat.
No.
Oh, good.
That would be neither cool nor awesome. so yeah, I've just sort of caught up on filing them away and, you know, updating my little app that keeps me informed as to what I've actually got in my collection for when I'm actually out at other stores chasing back issues. So yeah, comics a bit quiet. Big highlight for me last week was going to see Regurgitator on the weekend.
You saw the Gurge.
I saw the Gurge. Now, for those who think there are only three Australian bands, there's four, yes. Regurgitator being one of them, being one of the best Australian bands of all time. He said kind of biased. They're just a lot of fun. They have a lot of silly songs, and I hadn't listened to anything of theirs in quite some time, even though Unit is one of my favorite albums ever. And you kind of forget exactly how rude some of their songs are.
They're a bit saucy.
Bit saucy. Like, you know, they open the show with their classic track, "I Sucked a Lot of to Get Where I Am." And, you know, there's nothing quite like an entire venue filled to the brim with people all chanting along to the chorus of another song, which is "I Will Lick Your Hole." So
yes,
you know, it was a great night out. It was lovely to spend time with Kylie seeing the Gurge. So yeah, that was a highlight of my past week. How about you, Paul? What's been happening with you?
Well, nothing as classy as that. I got a lovely care package from the Darren and Ruth Sutherland in America. They I left them an iTunes review, and apparently it was some sort of competition, and I won. And I thought, no, they said they'll send me some autographed comics, and I went, ooh, that'd be nice. And I thought I'd get like three issues or something like that. But mm-hmm. I got three incredible books. I got a Warlord trade. I didn't even know there was a classic Warlord trade, but apparently is. And it's signed by Mike Grell.
Wow.
And then I got a book called Xenozoic, which is a massive collection of Cadillacs and Dinosaurs comics, mm-hmm. sometimes called Xenozoic Tales. And inside that, there was a personalized autograph to me.
Wow.
Yeah, and then there was a Trekker Talk omnibus, a Dark Horse one, and that had a personalised autograph to me and a little sketch inside by Ron Randall, who has worked on the Doom Patrol. Did you know that?
I'm blanking on what he's actually done. Oh, hang on. I think he did he do some of the Giffen era stuff?
Yeah, he pitched in on the Giffen stuff.
Yes. So, yeah. Wow, that's for those that aren't aware, Ruth and Darren podcast about all three of those titles on their show. So that's
they have three separate shows, yeah.
Yeah, so that's an awesome package you received.
Yeah, so my to-read pile just grew quite a bit. But I've just cleared the deck, so I'm about to start reading Warlord, and I'm really excited because I've always wanted to read. Warlord was one of those titles that when I started getting into comics, it was hot, so it was kind of hard to pick up because people liked it, and they already, they're a bit pricey, and it was really hard to find a complete run or, consecutive run. So I kind of avoided it just because I always felt like I couldn't get any traction on it. Mm-hmm. So never read any, looking forward to it.
Well, I'm very excited to know that there is such a trade because I remember reading a few issues of Warlord as a kid too, and it was very different and very weird, and I do recall enjoying it, and I haven't read anything of it since then. But so this is it's quite good news.
Yeah, wow. Exciting. Thanks, Darren. Thanks, Ruth.
Awesome.
Awesome. Cool.
Cool. Anyway, speaking of awesome and cool, how about we have a look at what's going down on Darrington Way?
Oh, yeah. Well, it's been very, 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 very quiet, except it's not quiet. It's exciting. We've got new solicitations for January came out today, this morning.
Cool.
And within that, all weekend I was looking for sneak peeks of the Young Animal solicitations, and they didn't have any. It was really frustrating. Yeah. You know, usually they come out a few days earlier, and nothing. But they came out today along with everything else. So Doom Patrol number 5 has a beautiful cover of Cliff Steele's head in close-up. Now my lock screen on my phone. Yeah. So that's cool. It's really hard to describe on a podcast, but it looks good. If you see me in the street, ask me to show me my phone.
Right.
Show you my phone.
Yes.
I've already seen my phone.
I should hope so.
Anyway, this is what the text says for Doom Patrol number 5. It's written by Gerard Way, art and cover by Nick Derrington. That's 5 issues without an art change or a hiccup.
Mm-hmm.
Or high fives all round.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's got a variant cover by Farrell Dalrymple, who he sings happy. Is that bloke?
That is not that bloke.
Oh, okay. It's another artist.
Yes.
One without a big hat. Anyway.
He might have a big hat. You never know.
He does sort of indie cool image stuff, does he? Do stuff with Brown and Graham? I don't know. I've heard the name.
I'm aware of the name, but I'm blanking on what I've seen of his before.
Yeah. Anyway, and this is the text of the solicitation, and it says, "The team is back together at last." Sounds like the Doom clock's going to get reset that way.
It is, yeah.
Though why they're back together remains an unanswered riddle. After the mind-blowing revelations of the previous issue... previous issues, multiple, so something big happens in 4, maybe in 3. Mm-hmm. Casey Brink has to figure out what this all means going forward. Or maybe it's just the end of everything after all. Plus, Robot Man punches stuff.
Hooray! Well, after I have another song for him.
Yeah. I can be down for more Robot Man punching stuff. And that comes out on January the 11th, so in 2017. Mm-hmm. And it's $3.99, and it's for mature readers, but we can read it, as we've proven. And a week after that is Doom Patrol number 1 Director's Cut, which we found out about a little while ago, written by Gerard Way, who wrote the original Doom Patrol number 1, so that's a nice change. John Byrne didn't write it. Art by Nick Derrington and cover by Gerard Way. What? You know, it says, get the inside scoop on one of the year's most talked about debuts. Well, that was last year, really. Anyway, experience Doom Patrol number 1 presented in its original raw pencil form along with the behind-the-scenes details including preliminary art, process materials, and more. Oh, I'm very curious about the more. I want a script. I want to see a script. I want to see notes. I want to see doodles. I want to see, you know, lunchtime more menus for what they ordered while they were working on it. I want to see song lists.
Yep. Yep. But, yeah, song lists, please, because I'm still trying to figure out what the song was we saw at the end of issue 2.
Yeah.
I've been searching on lyrics on the net for some time, and I still haven't had any luck. So
I reckon it's yet to be written or released, or it's probably been written but not released.
Maybe, yeah.
It's going to come out in a cassette at some convention that we won't be at.
I'll need to find a cassette player, damn it.
I've got one in my car, but my car's bogged at the moment. Anyway, one of my cars.
Right. Oh, one of my cars. Fancy.
No, don't get excited. This is the one that costs $1,500.
Right.
Okay. Anyway, and it's available on January 18, 2017. 64 pages. Sweet. Ooh. Ooh. That's probably about 48 pages once you put in all the ads. Full color. $5.99 US for mature readers.
Well, that, okay.
Oh, I'm going to pick it up anyway.
Yeah, yeah. I'll still give it a gander.
Yeah. Is that some ticking I hear?
It is indeed some ticking, and that can only be the mighty Doom Clock. Okay, so looking at the face of the mighty Doom Clock, we can see that the last issue of a Doom Patrol book was issue 2 of volume 6 from Jared Way and Nick Darrington. So it's been 1 week since the last Doom Patrol book. The next issue, number 3, is due November 9th, just 3 weeks away. While we're talking about this volume of Doom Patrol, Paul, I think we need to cover something we omitted from last episode. We completely forgot to thank Todd Klein on letters and Tamara Bonville on colors for their work so far in Doom Patrol.
Todd did some great stuff with the robot text, the different type of text for that, and the balloons for that. And the colors are, they're awesome. They are just like... The cotton candy for the eyes.
At the very least, yes. It's just, yeah, we were so busy, you know, mouth, oh God, now I can't even talk properly. We were so busy, you know.
Mouth wording
over, you know, issue 2. We completely forgot to thank Todd and Tamara for their contributions to the team and the book, because without them, it wouldn't be the same. It's such a great, fantastic team they've got together for the book itself. You know, so kudos to them and you know, yeah, Nick and Jura, they do stuff too, I guess. But yeah, I think we should acknowledge them and thank them, because yeah, it wouldn't be the same without the four of them working together, I dare say.
Well, it'd be black and white and there'd be no text, for one thing.
Oh, it'd be like a silent movie, but in comic book form.
I wonder if we'd get the panel that says, "What's going on with Niles Calder?" Like a silent movie card, isn't it?
Oh, I just got an idea for a project. Okay. Anyway, the last appearance of the Doom Patrol as a team was a year and 10 weeks ago in two different comics, All-Star Section 8, number 3, and Justice League United, number 12. So they haven't become a team yet. We're getting there, though, according to the solicitation stuff we just heard. But this week in Doom Patrol history, released on October 21... 1965, for a mere 12 cents, was issue 100 of Doom Patrol by Arnold Drake and Bruno Premiani. Now, this issue featured the first part of a backup story that retold Robot Man's origins before the formation of the Doom Patrol, but the main story featured the origin of another character we're discussing this episode, Beast Boy.
Beast Boy.
This was the second appearance ever of Gar Logan, or Craig, as he was often referred to in the issue, for some bizarre reason. And Gar revealed his origin to the chief and the rest of the team in order to help the patrol save the city from rampaging dinosaurs.
Yeah.
Of course. We discussed this issue in detail way back in episode 34, so you can check that one out for more. And that's it for the Doom Clock this week.
Movies, TV, comics, music, pop culture affidavit has it all. It's everything random in the world of popular culture, and it's all covered by me, Tom Paneris. New episodes drop monthly at twotruefreaks.com, and be sure to check out blog posts about random pop culture topics at popcultureaffidavit.com. Pop Culture Affidavit, the sworn testimony of a dork.
Okay, it's time for doomsplaining, and this week we're talking about something a little bit different. We're going to be looking at stuff from the Teen Titans, specifically Tales of the New Teen Titan number 3 from 1982 and Teen Titans Earth 2 volume 2 from, I believe it was this year, Paul?
It's Earth 1 volume 2. It's just confusing, isn't it?
Sorry, the script says Earth 2 volume 2.
Yeah.
You were testing me and I failed miserably. Thanks for throwing me under the bus.
That's right. I was testing myself and I failed too when I wrote the script.
It's even there in the solicit information you've included as well.
Yeah, yeah. Classy.
Classy. Champagne comedy.
Teen Titans Earth 1 Volume 2.
There we go. That's what I meant to say. And I... Anyway, Paul, take us into the wonderful world of the Teen Titans.
Yeah, no, Teen Titans, they're... Doom Patrol came sort of around the same time? I don't know. I don't know my history. But anyway, came around the same time. Doom Patrol, I think, is, you know, it's like the fantastic condiment, whereas I think Teen Titans are more like bread. So, you know, everyone likes bread, but you get a bit sick of bread, and there's a lot of bread around generally. So there's a lot more Teen Titans out there than there is Doom Patrol.
This is true, yes.
Yeah, but one of the things the Teen Titans did was they borrowed from the Doom Patrol one of the choice ingredients, and that was Beast Boy. And they put him in Teen Titans comics, and he was in part of the Teen Titans West, or whatever they call it, West Coast Teen Titans. Anyway, and yeah, but when Marv Wolfman took over the Teen Titans, he really made Beast Boy a big character in the team, one of the five main characters. Yeah, so... But let's start with the most recent book, which was Teen Titans Earth 1, Volume 2. And it's a graphic novel. It's like a hardcover. It was not released in any other form except for the hardcover so far. Mm-hmm. And it came out on August 10th, this very year, 2016, the year of our Lord. And it was 144 pages, $22.99 US. Quite expensive, so I got it from the library. Written by Jeff Lemire, the Canadian writer. You're quite fond of Jeff, aren't you? I mean, he's writing.
I don't mind some of his stuff. Yeah, it's all right.
Yeah. Art and cover by Annie McDonald. And it's the sequel to Teen Titans Earth 1 Volume 1, which came out the previous year. Right. So I'll take you through that story. So feel free to ask questions, Mike. I know you haven't read it. Mm-hmm. So the graphic novel picks up where the previous one ended. So we've got the Titan cyborg, Terra Tempest, who is basically sort of a new version of Aqualad.
Right.
And Changeling, so which is Beast Boy. And they've escaped from the Starfire Compound, which was the name of the base. And they are on the run in Seattle. Beast Boy he's like the animalistic version. No, he's sort of green and got furry cheeks and pointy ears, and his teeth stick out a bit. Cyborg is very slimmed down, young version of Cyborg. So, and the armor, you know, the metal parts are much more smooth. And Terra, that's Tara, she looks... Tara Markov from the original comics. She, you know, just looks like a girl with short blonde hair. And Tempest, who is also codenamed Aqualad, he's more like Lagoon Boy, if anyone remembers Lagoon Boy from the old Titans comics, or Young Justice, I believe. Anyway.
Okay. Yep.
Yeah, so he's a sort of gilly guy with big dark eyes and likes being in the water all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway. But Tara is out on a mission to steal some painkillers to help Vic. He has a debilitating condition as his flesh is gradually being overrun by the alien metal, which came from the same spaceship where they actually captured Starfire, who is, you know, the alien from Tamaran.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, she is confronted by the cops at her drugstore break-in, and she's forced to use her earthquake powers. And then she gets back to their hideout, which is basically sort of under construction housing project.
Okay.
So, you know, houses and pools and everything, but no one's around and it's all half-built. So they're hiding out there. Meanwhile, the sympathetic head of security from Volume 1 is Slade Wilson. This is Deathstroke, for those of you who know your comics, but it's a... He's got two eyes, one thing, and he's more like Wintergreen, the way he looks. Okay. Wintergreen is sort of Deathstroke's butler.
Oh, okay. He's not actually Deathstroke in this Earth.
Well, he is Deathstroke, but he looks like Wintergreen. So, okay. You know, he's more like sort of 1970s Commissioner Gordon from the comics.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, anyway, but he's a, you know, a seasoned veteran soldier. And he was head of security for the Starfire Project where the Teen Titans escaped from. But he was sort of sympathetic to them. But he's been possessed by the baddie of the piece, which is Joey, his son, which is Jericho.
Oh, no.
Yeah, yeah. This is kind of like an evil version of Jericho. He looked like a regular kid, but he was actually trying to keep tabs on the team the whole time. Okay. And now they've escaped, and he has basically occupied his dad, and he hates his dad. And Joey is an agent of Niles Calder, who we never saw in the first volume, but there was reference to this Niles Calder being the head of the project. Okay. So he was pretending to be one of the group of teens, keeping them in line, and he failed to prevent them escaping, freeing the imprisoned alien, who they codenamed Starfire. Anyway, so Joey is using his father's combat skills to fight his way back into the high-rise base where Niles Calder dwells. and he comes in and he fights his way to the top of the building, and there's Niles, and he's in a bed. And Niles is like a skinny... He doesn't look old. He's probably in his, you know, 40s, but he looks like he's, you know, got cancer or something. He's got long red hair, and he's covered in sort of electrodes and, you know, monitoring equipment. And he looks really skinny and weak, but he's surrounded by these sort of... you know, Star Wars, the last prequel with the buzz droids that are sort of attack the Jedi fighters?
Yes.
He's got sort of all these little robots around him like that.
Okay.
And they're presumed that they are his helpers and his bodyguards. Anyway, so Niles is being threatened by Slade, who is talking in turn with Joey. So Joey is sometimes controlling Slade's voice and sometimes Slade gets to talk. And Slade wants to Joey return to normal and given his own body because his body got destroyed in the first volume. But Joey wants to tell Niles that he did stuff up and he failed to keep track of most of the runaways, but he was able to follow Starfire and the outsider known as Raven. So Raven didn't escape from the base. She came from outside. So she was sort of called to the base to rescue Starfire by some sort of psychic connection.
Okay.
And Raven is sort of a Native American girl.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, with sort of magic powers, a bit cliched, but, you know, well characterized. And suddenly this meek black scientist named Joshua Clay walks in and interrupts to say that Seattle police have sighted a girl with earthquake powers. So this is Josh Clay, who is from the Doom Patrol Volume 2, and before that, the second incarnation of the Doom Patrol. But he's nothing like it. Like, he really is just a scientist dude.
Does he have a jumper on?
Not quite, but he's wearing lab coat, man.
Okay.
Yeah, and not a big role, but he's like Niles' lackey.
Right.
Anyway, so Joey asks if Niles will send out the Doom Patrol. So they actually named this thing called the Doom Patrol to recapture the teens. But okay. Niles says, no, I want to use them to recover Starfire. So he's going to send the Doom Patrol, whatever they are. And for the Seattle kids, he will send out the Titans.
Right.
I thought the Titans were the ones who escaped, but no, there's another group of Titans. Meanwhile, Raven and Starfire are on the reservation and they're discussing her alien origins. And Raven has empathic powers, so she's in sort of mental hookup with Starfire, whose real name is Coriander. So Starfire just looks like a regular girl with long red hair, but not, you know, super weird or super busty or anything like in the comics.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, Teen Titans Go, whatever you're talking about. Anyway, so through this mental connection, Raven is able to see what happened on Coriander's home planet. So it's a beautiful, you know, sort of canyony home planet with you know, alien sort of dwellings. And then this whole fleet of aliens arrive and start attacking the place. And they're after Coriander for some reason. And she fled in a spaceship to Earth. And then she got caught by Niles and used in experiments. And he used her alien DNA to create... the teens who escaped in the first volume.
Huh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And she said it's in the aliens who were chasing her can sense her mind wherever she goes, but Raven can shield her, so conceal her location from the aliens who attacked her.
Okay.
Anyway, suddenly they're attacked, and it's by a group of fairly unexciting soldiers of Niles Calder who are called the Doom Patrol, but they're just regular soldiers, really, with some high-tech gear. Yeah.
That's disappointing.
And, Yeah, I know. It's a waste of a Doom Patrol. But they're led by Slade with Joey in control. And Starfire comes out blasting, and there's all this sort of skirmishing. And Joey tries to jump into Raven to take control of her mind because he wants to upgrade his powers.
Mm-hmm.
Go from old man with combat ability to young girl with empathetic and telepathic and teleporting sort of powers. But he finds himself captured in her soul self. So he sort of bounces off a shield and then ends up trapped inside her spirit. That's a bit like the classic Raven, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the girls overpower all the soldiers. Meanwhile, the teens in Seattle, they're all sleeping and homeless and hungry and all that sort of stuff. They're awoken by the sound of choppers. And as they race outside, they're soon under attack from Impulse, who's a speedster called Wally,
mm-hmm.
with red hair.
Right.
One girl who's a little black girl with super strong powers, and a white girl called Cole, K-O-L-E, who you don't really see her powers much, but she can sort of do force pushing and stuff.
Okay.
Anyway, so there's a big skirmish going on. Impulse, being a speedster, is kicking their butt. Tempest is in the pool, and he's able to send all the water from the pool to wash Cole and Wonder Girl off his friends. And the Runaways, well, they're no match for Impulse, so they all get caught, and soon they're all wearing these power inhibitor collars, and they get bundled onto a helicopter to be flown back to Niles Calder's base. And Raven and Starfire, we see that they have pretended to be captured, so they've not told the soldiers that they've been... they're working with Slade, basically. Now that Joey is gone, Slade can sort of make plans with them.
Okay.
Yeah, and so they decided to dupe Niles by traveling back. And they're getting the full story on what's going on. So Slade is telling them that there was this... Starfire was one of the projects, and the other one was called Blackfire. And the teens who attacked the heroes were... they're the projects of Blackfire. So the experiment with Starfire was the teens were raised with sort of fake parents and, you know, made to feel normal, whereas the ones who were raised at Blackfire were sort of full-on militia-type kids who think the government sucks and they want to overthrow the, you know, the US government. And,
okay.
You know, they're very indoctrinated and they believe everything they're told by Niles, and they think Niles is like their cool scientist dad, and they, you know,
oh,
willing to die for him and all that sort of stuff.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah.
Wow.
So as the teens, who have captured the main heroes, return to the base, Niles is delighted to see the extent of the transformation in Cyborg and has him taken away to be observed in the lab. Now, Niles comes out of his bed at this point, and he's wearing like an exoskeleton.
Okay.
That helps him to walk and sort of connects to his back and everything.
Right.
And he calls this exoskeleton, wait for it, uh-oh, Robot Man.
Oh, God. Right.
Yeah. So Cyborg gets taken away to the lab because he's going through all these changes. Terra, Changeling, and Tempest are all, they're bunked down with the other teens.
Mm-hmm.
There's a bit of argy-bargy between them all, but yeah. And Niles is basically really worn out from wearing the Robot Man suit, so he goes back to bed. And then Slade returns with Starfire in tow, and he says that Raven was killed. And Niles is like, "Great, I'm going to keep her near me so I can experiment on her whenever I need to, and I'm never going to let her out of my sight now." And then Slade announces, "Hey, Joey isn't here anymore, so guess what? Starfire isn't actually under my control either," and she starts blasting Niles. And I don't want to spoil the rest of the book because it's a fairly new graphic novel, but there's a lot of fighting.
Right.
It ends with sort of this whole, you know, Niles called a Doom Patrol plot all sort of shut down, and it sort of gears up for a sequel where the aliens who are after Starfire have basically tracked her down and they're on their way.
So, okay.
Yeah, so interesting. Now, one of the things I think is weird about it is basically Jeff Lemire has sort of appropriated the Doom Patrol and just sort of incorporated elements of it in like an evil scientist group. So
yeah.
It's kind of like Hive in the classic Teen Titans, but he's called it, Starfire and Blackfire, and it's all run by Niles Calder. And it's a really odd choice because he could have used anybody, but he's gone with this, you know, this other group of teens. You know, and we know that Niles can be a villain in some versions of the Doom Patrol, but this is he's pretty irredeemable in this.
Yeah, some parts of it, the way you describe it, reminds me a little bit of the Ravagers series as well from the New 52, which did have Niles turn up sort of later on in its run because it didn't go very long.
Yeah.
But he was also sort of not so much controlling the teens, but he sort of became their new de facto leader and provided them with a base and you know, helped them train to use their powers, which they did gain from Hive and the colony because they were kidnapped and, you know, experimented on. So, yeah, it's a similar sort of a thread there. Yeah.
Yeah, and there's one of the soldiers is called Trainer, so like Larry, so we don't... Uh-huh. We don't see his first name, and he's like a really, really minor character. So I just thought it was odd that it was, you know, taking the Doom Patrol characters and sort of putting them in a Titan story as the villains.
And, you know, reducing poor Robot Man to nothing but an exoskeleton.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, so, I mean, this is a huge seller, this book. Like, it sells to quite well to an outside audience, I believe. So,
okay.
They're big, you know, it's a big selling graphic novel. It was like the third for the month when it came out. So.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, so it's interesting, but it sort of wipes out any possibility of having a proper Doom Patrol Earth 1 volume.
So for those, including myself, that haven't read anything of Earth 1, what's the basic premise and, I guess, setting of Earth 1? What makes it different from, I guess, the DC Prime universe?
It's kind of like an opportunity to retell the stories of known characters in a sort of blank slate world.
Right, okay.
So they did Superman Earth 1, which was, a bit more of a real modern-day version of Superman appearing in the world. And they did Batman Earth 1. And they did Wonder Woman Earth 1, which I think is the best of these so far.
Okay.
Yeah. But yeah, and this one has art by Andy McDonald, and there were colours by Brad Anderson and with help from Alan Pasqualacqua. Yeah, I always have trouble with these names. I'm sorry. But yeah, I mean, the first volume I think had Terry and Rachel Dodson in art, so it was much lusher art.
Okay.
But, I mean, this is pretty good, not as good as the first volume. But if you're interested in it and it sounds like your thing, I'm pretty sure there'll be a volume 3.
Okay.
But I would come to it if you want to see a fresh take on the Titans. I don't think you'd come to it if you wanted to see a fresh take on the Doom Patrol.
No.
They get sold down the river a bit in this. A
little bit, yeah.
Yeah.
Poor bastards.
Yeah. Anyway, it's a nice hardcover. It's got some good... consistent design with the other Earth 1 collections.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. Good. If you're unsure, get it from the library.
That always works.
Or steal it from someone who got it from the library.
Paul.
Oh, you shouldn't do that.
No. Anyway, tell us about Tales of the New Teen Titans number 3.
Okay, now this is going back a ways. So this is back in 1982. So according to Mike's Amazing World of Comics, this is actually, the full title is Tales of the New Teen Titans number 3 starring Changeling. And it came out cover date August 1982, actually came out May 27th, 1982, 60 cents. Edited by Len Wein, the comic writer, editor. Editors make good writers. Writers make good editors, don't you think?
Sure.
Well, they don't say stupid things like, let's do a, 20-part crossover that goes into all the books that no one wants to read.
This is true, yeah.
Yeah, written by Marv Wolfman, no relation to Dracula. Penciled by George Perez, inked by Gene Day, lettered by John Costanza,
ooh,
and coloured by Adrian Roy. So some, pedigree creators on this one.
Before you get too much further into it, knowing that it's written by Marv Wolfman and it's drawn by Perez, and that we did cover the story where the Titans went to search for the survivors of the Doom Patrol and, their killers. Is it as wordy as that story?
Oh, bloody earth it is.
Oh, God. Right. Sorry, as you were, I just needed that confirmed.
Yeah, no, they're word balloons upon word balloons upon thought balloons upon caption boxes. Wow. So no shortage of reading here for the kiddies. Yeah. Anyway, I'll take you through this one. So the new Teen Titans have gone away to the Grand Canyon. So this was a four-issue miniseries, and each issue showcased a different character and sort of told their origin. Because the Teen Titans were kind of new and they were very popular, and they thought, let's have a miniseries to capitalize on this popularity. Because, sure, look, DC has something like the X-Men suddenly. That's how it was back then. And I believe they outsold the X-Men in the early 80s. Anyway. Mm-hmm. So they've gone away to the Grand Canyon for a spot of camping, lots of 80s pop culture references, some casual sexual harassment of Starfire, and to swap their origin stories. And after two nights, and coincidentally two earlier issues of Origin Tales, it's Gar Logan's turn. And he tells of his childhood in Africa with his scientist parents, contracting the deadly made-up Sakusha virus and the cellular cure which gave him green monkey genes and animal shape-changing powers. It's a classic story that so many people have experienced. And he tells of his stupid canoeing death of his stupid parents and how he was left alone in the jungle, and then he joined a tribe and made friends with the chief, and then he had attempts on his life by the culturally insensitive cliche witch doctor. He had a brief team up with some mercenary treasure hunters before they shot each other, which was a part of a practical joke he was playing on them, but he doesn't mention that. Anyway, he's found by his, let's call him an a-hole, his guardian, Nicholas Galtry, who tried to embezzle his entire inheritance. And then finally he was liberated from Galtry through some shenanigans with the Doom Patrol. And he joined the Doom Patrol, sort of. Then he was adopted by Elastigirl, Rita Farr, our favorite character from the classic Doom Patrol, and the smug hero Mento, our least favorite character from the classic Doom Patrol, who's Steve Dayton, the fifth richest man in the world, no matter what decade it is, we've discovered. And he even met a girl named Jillian and almost dated her in a few pages of the 60s Doom Patrol. And worth noting, this is the first reappearance of Jillian since the issues we talked about recently. Issue 119 or whatever it was.
That poor girl, she had 20-something years to wait.
Yeah. Anyway, when the Doom Patrol were killed in issue 121 of the volume 1, which we haven't talked about yet, we will get to, Gar made a living as an actor in a TV show called Space Trek 2022, where he was treated pretty badly as a freak. And then one day the show set was attacked by a dude in high-tech red armor calling himself the Arsenal, just like that villain in the old Doom Patrol comic in 1967.
Ooh.
Except he had green armor back then.
Yes.
And Gar fought him off, but wondered, who was this dude and why did he want to kill Gar so bad? That's what Gar wondered. Anyway, everything was going really well for Gar until the Space Trek 2022 show was sued as being a ripoff of some other TV show. I don't know what. And Gar was sad and he returned to his adopted father's mansion like most people do when they lose their jobs.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, Jillian had gotten back in touch with him. She's still a young lady, which is good. And they started having a dating montage. And they're unaware that they were in the high-tech crosshairs of the Arsenal. And suddenly, the Arsenal had his revenge by shooting Gar and Jillian totally dead.
Oh.
No, actually, he just captured Jillian in a net and flew away with her. This really weird, elaborate castle hideout. And Gar followed him as a bird. Where did he get a castle?
Anyway.
Yeah, anyway. Gar suspects it may be a trap, and he walks in to discover that it is a trap. He gets captured in a glass case with electrified glass walls, right?
Sure, comic book science.
Yeah, you can electrify the glass walls.
Yeah, why not?
And this allows the red armored villain to overshare about his story and deals and stuff. And turns out the dude in the armor is Nicholas Galtry. He's a-hole ex-guardian, and he's got a new version of the Arsenal armor from Doom Patrol 113 in 1967, episode 66 of the podcast, if you're in the mood to listen to another episode. And he explains the hanging plot point from that issue of who exactly was the midget inside the Arsenal armor. Because we never really did get a good explanation. It was just a guy in there who's like,
yeah,
would have got away with it, except I didn't. Anyway, turns out it was just some midget, and Galtry had hired him to build the cool armor. And apparently he got some other armor from the midget.
Right.
Glad that's all cleared up. Thanks, Marv. Anyway, Galtry is still super pissed about being booted from controlling Gar's inheritance and demands Gar gets him $25 million from his adopted father, Steve Dayton. And Gar is able to make a phone call from this glass prison. And he calls the mansion, and Steve is out. Steve is out looking for the killers of the Doom Patrol, General Zahl and Madame Rue. So this dates it before the other Teen Titans story where they find the killers of the Doom Patrol. Mm. And he talks to the butler, Vernon Questa. That's a very butlery name.
Yes.
And says, can you give me 25 mil? And Vernon says, no, I'm not actually authorized to give away my boss's fortune like that. Good planning, Steve. No wonder you're the fifth richest man still. Anyway, Galtry is really bummed that Gar can't get the dough because Steve isn't home. But he has a plan B. He's probably out of money from spending it all on that castle. His plan B is Gillian has wealthy folks, not fifth level richest, but they are still worth fleecing, so he can ransom her and kill Gar and leaving him without oxygen. So he does that. He turns off the oxygen and walks out of the room because he don't want to watch someone die.
No.
No, and he's totally sure that'll happen. Turns out Gar isn't as definitely dead as Galtry hoped. He's trapped in an airtight container with electrified glass walls. But he's able to turn into a porcupine and shoot quills out that break the glass.
Oh, God.
That makes me terrified of porcupines because they've got, like, artillery bombardment power quills, apparently.
Apparently, yeah, sure.
Yeah. The deadly porcupine. Anyway, Gar is now on the loose and he attacks Galtry, turns into a lot of animals, and then eventually turns into a bear. He likes to turn into bears. It's his closing move a lot.
Mm.
And he shreds the armor, and he also decides to change his name to Changeling because Galtry kept calling him Beast Boy and he got sick of hearing him.
Right.
That's a pretty weak reason to change his name. I would actually like him to stay as Beast Boy for his entire life.
Yeah, Beast Boy's cool.
Yeah, 40-year-old Beast Boy. Or just Beast Dude.
Yeah, or just, I don't know. I was going to say just Beast, but, you know, then all the X-Men fans will be up in arms.
What about Beast of a Man? Boom, for short.
Boom, sure.
Boom.
Or Beast Boom. Man. Just Beast of a Man.
Anyway. And then his flashback is over, and in amongst all this flashback with these running gags about hot dogs getting burnt, because Gar kept telling his story and losing track of his hot dogs.
Right.
As you do. Mm. And everyone enjoys the story except for Starfire, who is sad because it's now her turn to tell her story in the next issue.
Right.
And apparently her story's a real downer.
Okay.
Yeah. But, I mean, this has great art throughout. If you know George Perez, you know what you're going to get from this. There's mm-hmm. no skimping on the details. The castle has all sorts of turrets and nooks and crannies and rocks and stones and things like that. And I'm very well aware that Marv Wolfman kind of writes Gar as kind of an annoying person a lot of the time. Like, he's really, like, he'll be telling his story and saying everything was super cool, and you'll see in the pictures that it wasn't super cool, like he was getting treated badly. But I think that's, I mean, one of the things I think you can see throughout the entire Titans run is there was an arc for every character, and where they were as people in the first time they appeared wasn't where they were by the time the series ended.
Okay.
So, you know, there's later stories where Gar, I mean, after the Judas contract and he's betrayed by Terra, he becomes a much more mature character, sort of.
Mm. Mm.
Yeah.
It does sound like his flashback is pretty true to what happened in the 60s run as well.
Yeah, there is absolutely very little variation between that and what happened in the comics. One thing they do in this story, oh, it's been a long...
Oh, God, mature readers, my ass.
One thing they do in this comic is they emphasize the African chief.
Right.
That who befriends Gar, and I think he becomes a character used in another story.
Okay.
So Gar returns to him, and I think it's something to do with Deathstroke. I can't remember all the details, but I do remember that he came back and became important. And I don't think he was really even named in the original comic. So
I can't recall it either. But it's nice that they've you know stuck mostly to what's come before. You know? And it's nice that we got the story behind the Arsenal after all these years.
Finally, who was that midget? There are so many Doom Patrol stories where we could just know a bit more about the villain, couldn't we?
What I'd love to see from maybe Wayne and Darrington and Bond Villain and Klein is a new team of enemies that are made up of all the one and done villains from the 60s runs. That would be insane. Anyway, I digress.
Anyway, I read this story. It was in a Teen Titans trade, which came out fairly recently. It's New Teen Titans Volume 3. I don't think it's been collected before outside of expensive omnibuses and archive books.
Mm-hmm.
And it has about 6 or 7 regular Titans issues, and then it has this entire miniseries.
Okay, cool.
So, yeah, good fun.
Yeah, I think I'd be more inclined to track down that story than I am the Earth 1 stuff, because, to be honest, none of the Earth 1 stuff has really grabbed my attention. I appreciate that it's, as you said, a new blank slate for all the heroes and, new tales for those characters. But I'm kind of like, sure. Yeah. I'd rather stick with what I know, I guess. And the fact that the Doom Patrol are kind of undersold in that story.
Yeah, you don't want a new formula Pepsi.
No.
You want classic.
Classic Pepsi. Doom Pepsi.
Yeah. Anyway, I think that's it for Doom's Blaining.
Cool. Well done, Paul.
Thank you.
Warlord Worlds, a fan podcast devoted to the comic creations of Mike Grell, including Warlord, John Sable, Starslayer, Shaman's Tears, and Green Arrow. I'm Darren.
And I'm Ruth. We hope you'll join us as we discuss the stories, characters, and art in the many excellent comics from writer and artist Mike Grell.
Warlord Worlds is available at podbean.com and on iTunes and Stitcher.
Find us at warlordworlds.com.
And now it's time for the Mailbag of Doom. And last week on the show, we asked everyone the question, what's your favourite sequel? And we heard from some people, didn't we? We heard from Jared Driscoll on Facebook, and he said, Caddyshack 2, better than the original. I can't recall. I've seen it. I can't recall.
I don't think I've seen either.
What?
I think I've seen bits of, I guess, the first one, sort of on TV occasionally.
You
but
call
I've
yourself
I've
a middle-aged American. Oh, you don't. That's cool.
I don't. It's on the to-watch list, sure.
Sweet.
We also heard from Jonathan Dick on Twitter, at Real Last Name, and he said, Aliens, it's one of the most quotable movies ever made.
Game over, man.
I was just going to say that. Nukem from orbit.
We heard from Holodil, who's a Death Latin this week. It's a bit negative. And he said, a lot of people hate this, but I like Back to the Future 2. The future, alternate dimension, seeing two Martys, cliffhanger ending.
Mm.
Yeah.
It was a good one. Yeah.
It's a good one. Watchable.
Cash Flag, a.k.a. Al, or at Rebus02, said, tough. Couple I really enjoy are Empire, Aliens, Back to the Future 2, and Grease 2. It amuses me, but I can't stand Grease. Oh, my God.
That's hitting Mike in the...
It's got me right in the Newton Johns.
Right where it hurts.
I can't agree with you on Grease 2. Sorry, Al.
Well, if you hate the first one, that makes the sequel better, but it's a bit... It's weird. Anyway. We heard from Between the Pages at BTP blog, who we have been calling by the wrong gender, apparently. This is a lady person.
Yes. Hello, Karen. Thank you for your responses and apologies for getting it wrong.
For dudifying you. It's wrong. We shouldn't have.
Yes.
She said probably Rooster Coburn and the Lady, which starred John Wayne and Katharine Hepburn. And they make a wonderful team. I've not seen that. I didn't even know there were sequels to Rooster Coburn.
No, I've not seen. Yeah, I was the same. I was wondering what that's a sequel to.
Yeah, but I'm pleased with myself that I didn't say Rooster Cogburn.
Yes, I'm glad you didn't say that. God. Justin Partridge at JP3 Words on Twitter said Evil Dead 2. It improves on the first in every way. Yep, good one. Yep.
Nice. We heard from Big Tim Styles and he said Captain America, the Winter Soldier.
Yeah,
that's good. Cool.
Yeah,
it's a good film.
Yeah. Nikki at @anti_laser on Twitter said, The Empire Strikes Back is the easy choice, so I'll go with Gremlins 2. Perfect sequel to the original, surpasses it, in my opinion. It's nuts. Yes, good choice.
Yeah, I agree with that. Gremlins 2 had a lot of weird going on, a lot of quirky.
It ramped up the crazy in unexpected ways. Yeah.
And my favorite line in that is... something about the car on level 2 needs to be moved. It is dirty. Something like the whole automated building going nuts.
Anyway.
Ange, Dr. Ange 70, he said The Godfather 2. Brilliant acting, Corleone backstory, Michael's further descent into evil, and Frankie Pentagelli.
Yeah, Frankie. Yeah.
Frankie.
Yeah.
I haven't seen the Godfather films for yonks.
Yep.
They're good. I did like them. I can't remember them very well.
I don't think I've... Okay, I haven't seen number 2.
Oh!
Haven't seen number 3. And I've seen parts of the first one.
Oh.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Really letting down the team tonight. Bud A, or at rbudf09 on Twitter, said, Attack of the Killer Tomatoes, part 4. Killer Tomatoes Eat France. Well, if a picture can eat Paris... ..
I didn't know there was a part 4.
Nor did I, but you know.
Attack of the Killer Tomatoes was one of those films that was always on at the Cult Cinema in North Sydney when I was growing up, so you could go see it whenever you wanted. And sure. I don't think I ever did.
No, same here. I'm aware of it. I've seen images. I've never seen any of them.
Mike's currency is going down and down every answer. we heard from Moby-1, that's Moby-1, and he said, finding it hard to choose between Aliens, Army of Darkness, and Superman 2, but going to go with Army of Darkness here, another Evil Dead sequel.
Yeah, that was a good one. Yeah.
Groovy.
Mm. I think that was the first one I actually saw of that series when I was a kid.
Right.
Yeah.
I saw the first one first, and it was like, oh, this is really inappropriate and wrong and naughty. And then it took me a while to twig that the second one was comedy. Like, I think I went, when they chopped off the hand and stuck it in the bin and they put the book on top that said Farewell to Arms. So it was going, is that a joke? It's funny when you're young and you take everything really earnestly and you go, yeah. There's a lot of horror films I can watch really easily now that I'm old that I couldn't watch when I was young.
Right.
It's bizarre.
Okay.
Maybe I'm just... experience more of the true horror of life. Just
maybe.
An adult and paying bills and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, that'll be it. That'll be it.
Moths, that sort of thing.
We also heard from Martin Gray at Mark Gray on the Twitter. Yeah, he said, you missed me this week. Sob. So trying again for question of the week. In comics, film, and a book. Oh, geez, he's outdone himself this time. And he said, Batman Dark Detective.
Steve Englehart and Marshall Rogers returning to the character.
Six-issue miniseries from the early noughties.
This was about James Robinson finished it because it wasn't all written, I think. Or if I'm remembering. No, I could be wrong. I'm thinking of the one that Archie Goodwin. Forget it. Shut up, Paul.
For his movie choice, he said The Bride of Frankenstein. Yep. And for
that's
book,
a sequel to Seven Brides for Seven Brothers, I believe. Right.
Sure. And for book, he said The Road Back by Eric Maria Remarque. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. With a blurb on the front saying, a finer book than his All Quiet on the Western Front. So I'm assuming it's a sequel to that because I haven't read it.
I think it's a sequel to The Road There.
Oh, God.
Sorry.
Sure.
We heard from at Ostrikers One on Twitter, Kevin. He's just calling himself KMW now. Mm. He said, "The Empire Strikes Back, without a doubt."
Good choice. I've got to say, I'm surprised. Normally on Twitter, at this time of year, leading up to Halloween, people change their Twitter handles to something spooky. Yeah. And, you know, with all the anagrams of his name that Kevin's given us over the years, he's not stepped up to the game.
Yeah. What would you...
Spooky. Anyway, what's your choice for your favourite sequel, Paul?
This is really tough. I love Aliens. Love Aliens. I think it's such a good film. Mm-hmm. But I think I'm going to go with the one that no one has said, and that is Terminator 2: Judgment Day. I really like that film. It's great. It's got some great action, cool moments. I could watch it anytime.
Mm-hmm.
Can't watch it now. I'm recording a podcast, but anytime apart from now.
Right after this, you're going.
Right after this, on my way home, I'm going to watch it in the car.
Yep, you'll fire up the VHS, and you know.
Put the... It's a VCS.
Shut up. It's late. I'm tired. Working on 3 hours sleep, so I'm amazed we got this far. My answer would have to be
Civil War II.
No, The Empire Strikes Back. Yes, it's a. There are lots of other really good sequels in that, but to me, that's like the perfect middle point of a story.
It was probably the best sequel that we'd ever seen at that point.
This is true, yeah, and it had such an impact on young Mike at the time. Also because of the fact that I saw the films out of order as a kid. Because sometimes seeing things that were quite readily available here in Australia weren't as easily available to people growing up in a different country like Papua New Guinea, which was...
Yeah, right. So you saw the Force Awakens first.
Yeah, that's... No, I saw A New Hope. Then I saw Return of the Jedi in a cinema.
And then
you know, we were finally excited to get to see it on a VHS cassette tape, which is what I meant to say before. Because we knew that there was an ice planet and there was some little green monster man called Yoda, but we had no idea what happened in it or how it all connected. So when we finally got to see the missing piece of the puzzle, it made so much more sense.
Oh.
So it was an even bigger impact other than what happened in the story in that sequel. So that's my answer for that.
Yeah, I mean, seeing Empire Strikes Back is one of the fondest memories of my childhood.
Yeah, good stuff. Good stuff.
Good stuff. Bloody good stuff.
Oh, geez, what a show. Now, before we sign off, should I mention what we were discussing earlier today?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Mike has a theory.
I have a theory.
I've got a theory.
It's not well thought out. It's come together very haphazardly, but I have a sneaking suspicion, a gut feeling, a hunch, if you will, about who Casey Brink's mother is.
Let's hear it, mate.
I believe Casey's mother is Rhea Jones, a.k.a. Lodestone.
You've blown my mind.
Let's look at some of the facts. We know that Gerard Way wants to take everything that's come before, throw it in a blender, and in his own words, fuck shit up. So there's that. We know that Casey's mother flew off into the sun, or into a sun.
If that is literal, that is pretty closely tied to what happened to Lodestone.
This is true, so there's nothing to say that she didn't, you know, come back to wherever. Well, we're assuming Danny Land, because I'm still going on the hunch that... Casey was born in Danny Land, so maybe Rhea came there, had Casey, took off again at some point. You also got the red hair on both women, so hello, genetics right there.
Yeah.
And as you recall, before Rhea went into her coma and was transformed once she woke up again, she was usually quite a happy and optimistic person.
She was.
So a similar character trait there. So I'm wondering, you know... I could be way off base here, but I'm just wondering aloud to everyone that's listening now whether Casey's mum is Rhea. And that's going to be one of the revelations in an upcoming issue.
Okay, well, on the wall here, I've got a great big pin board, and I'm going to put that picture in the middle, and I'm going to put a pin in it, and I'm going to run some red thread across to this question mark over here. And we will keep an eye on that in the weeks to come.
We will. I'm almost tempted to put a bet on it, but I don't know if I'm quite comfortable with that yet.
I've scrawled in paper here. I've written, who is the mum? And I've got a picture of Lodestone. I'm just going to pin that over here. Cool. And more red string, and we'll run that over here.
Yep.
Yep. Awesome.
Excellent. Cool.
This is coming together.
So yeah, that was. I was just thinking about it today. I just, you know, and we have the line that Casey said that her mother said to her before she flew off. What was it? Be the brightest star in a black hole.
Yeah,
and I thought that sounds sort of gibberish that Lodestone was spouting. And the other thing that made me think of it is that the Doom Patrol are being drawn towards Casey. Like a magnet.
A weirdness magnet.
Yes. And just before the last story arc in Morrison's run that featured Lodestone, you know, it was revealed that she was, you know, in tune with the Earth's magnetic fields and, you know, was of great importance to the two warring alien races that were wanting to recruit her for either side. So I'm wondering if somehow that's inhabited itself in some manner in cases.
Well, the robots are after her.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
Oh, so, yeah, get that red tape ready, you know.
Yeah. All right. The string.
Mum watch is activated.
Okay. Sweet.
Wait, that sounds really wrong.
It's not the first thing you've said tonight that's wrong. I wanted to give a shout out to Doug because I read his review of Doom Patrol 2 and it sort of articulated something that I think we were trying to say, but did it better than we were trying to say. Mm-hmm. He word good. But he said that Negative Man was getting the two sort of punk guys to fight because he is thriving on the negative energy of that. Yeah. And remember in the cab he was saying to Sam, you know, start shouting at the driver.
Yes,
get angry.
Ambulance.
Yeah, so he was trying to raise negative emotions around him, which were generating energy for him.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't just a random "let's make punks fight." It was actually there was a method there. So.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, good call, Doug.
Good Dougie. Call. It's all coming together. All the speculation.
Yeah, go check out Doug's site. It's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
His blog.
And you can check that out at mygreatadventure80.blogspot.com. And while you're checking out that Doom Patrol hotness, you can also check out our Facebook page, our Twitter feed, at WFDpod. Say hi to Wilfred while you're there. And you can always reach us at awaitingfordoom@gmail.com. And you know what? If you're so inclined, leave us a review on iTunes. Let us know what you think of the show. Hopefully you guys are still enjoying it. But yes, we'll be back in 2 weeks' time where we'll be discussing. God, what is wrong with me tonight?
We'll be discussing.
Doom Patrol Volume 2, Issue 54 from Grant Morrison and Richard Case.
Yeah.
What's that one about?
Maybe Issue 55. I'm undecided on.
Oh.
Maybe.
Maybe? Okay.
Maybe. I think we ought to speed up the GMO stuff.
Yeah. We'll see. And Paul, what's the question of the week?
The next question of the week is, who's your favorite character who hides their face?
Hmm. Okay.
Hmm.
Well, clearly it's Batman, but anyway. All right, guys, we'll leave it there and sign off for now. Thank you very much for joining us once again, and we'll catch you again in 2 weeks for more Waiting for Doom.
Yeah, go leave us an iTunes review. You've got none from Australia. I'm just pointing out none from Australia. We are Australians, and it's un-Australian that we have no iTunes reviews from Australia. Just pointing that out. I've pointed it out now. Everyone move on. Don't feel guilty. Get on with it. Yep. If you're not Australian, no need for guilt. It's cool. Cool. Whatever.
But need for iTunes
Everyone reviews. Go about what you're doing. Have a good night. Or a good day. Good morning. Whatever.
Say good night, folks. Paul.
In the future, enjoy it.
Let's get out of here.
Sorry.
Oh, dearie me.